Human nature can get a little messy, but nature is powerful enough to save us from ourselves. Seventh Generation Laundry Detergent lifts away tough stains with a 97% bio-based formula. For when you think whipping up yellow curry chicken in white pants is a great idea, totally not speaking from experience. Let nature do its thing, so you can feel confident doing yours. That's the power of Seventh Generation. Find Seventh Generation Laundry Detergent in fresh lavender and other scents at SeventhGeneration.com.
Thanks to you at home for joining me this hour. In 1993, Time magazine called it the pill that changes everything. The new abortion pill called RU46 was part of a two-drug protocol for medication abortion, and it really changed the American healthcare landscape and the landscape across the globe. Pregnant people in China, the United Kingdom, Sweden, and France, where the drug had already been approved, had the ability to end pregnancies without undergoing surgery, and even in some cases, from inside the four walls of their own homes. According to Time, RU486 made abortion a truly personal and private choice. But it also opened up a whole new frontier of anti-abortion backlash. As soon as the drug was first developed and approved in France in the 1980s, it sparked protests. Facing intense pressure from the Catholic Church, the company behind the pill decided to temporarily just pull it from the market. In the U.S., the pill was considered a banned substance. Federal research was forbidden during the Reagan and Bush years. Finally, in September of 2000, after 4 years and three rounds of FDA reviews during the Clinton administration, RU486 was approved in the U.S. But the war had just begun.
In other news this morning, abortion opponents say they're outraged over the government's decision Thursday approving the use of the abortion pill RU486 in this country. Abortion rights supporters call it a victory over medical McCarthyism. It's a drug that fundamentally changes the way a woman can end a pregnancy. NBC's Hillary Lane reports.
No bigger than an aspirin, mifepristone, better known as RU486, may be the most controversial drug the FDA ever has approved.
Medical advances should go through a rigorous scientific process, but they shouldn't have to go through the kind of political process that mifepristone has had to deal with.
Protesters lined the streets across the country for months in the years 2000 and 2001, calling for the FDA to rescind its approval. These were relatively small groups of protesters, but they were loud and they were persistent. Today, nearly 24 years later, the protesters were back, this time in front of the Supreme Court, where their legal advocates were inside petitioning the highest court in the land to restrict access to RU486, now known as mifepristone. Led by Aaron Hawley, whose husband is Republican Senator Josh Hawley, today a group of conservative Christian lawyers calling themselves Alliance Defending Freedom pushed the court's conservative justices to ban the use of mifepristone after 7 weeks of pregnancy and to revoke the FDA's 2021 decision to allow mifepristone to be mailed after a telehealth appointment. Hawley and her group were some of the same lawyers who helped argue the Dobbs case, the one that overturned Roe v. Wade. And that is no coincidence. There is a reason why the group behind Dobbs is now targeting mifepristone. And that's because despite the patchwork of states that banned abortion after Dobbs in 2022, the number of abortions here in the U.S. actually increased the following year in 2023, according to data from the Guttmacher Institute. Now, the reason for that is largely telehealth. It has allowed women who live in states where abortion has been banned to still access abortion medication through the mail. Pills were used in 2/3 of abortions last year when we saw that increase. The anti-abortion movement knows this and does not like this. And so they want to do everything they can to stop it, which is why they are now targeting mifepristone and targeting telehealth appointments and targeting the mailing of pills. And they are hoping that this Supreme Court, the one that overturned Roe and invited more legal challenges to all sorts of established freedoms, they are hoping that this Supreme Court will help them do it. Today, Ms. Hawley tried to convince the justices that mifepristone, which, by the way, is safer than both Tylenol and Viagra, that it is somehow dangerous for women and that its use causes emotional harm to emergency room doctors who might someday, hypothetically, have to treat a woman who took mifepristone for a medication abortion.
According to Guttmacher, nearly 650,000 women take mifepristone every single year. It's no surprise that respondents have experienced an increase in emergency room visits and indeed treated women suffering from abortion drug harms. Outsourcing of abortion drug harm to respondent doctors forces them to choose between helping a woman with a life-threatening condition and violating their conscience. When they are called from their labor and delivery floor down to the operating room to treat a woman suffering from abortion drug harm, that is diametrically opposed to why they entered the medical profession. It comes along with emotional harm.
But the justices today, even conservatives like Neil Gorsuch and Clarence Thomas, even them, seemed more than a little skeptical of the group of doctors Holly represents, which includes physicians and dentists. They seemed less than convinced that these seven doctors have anything more than a really long shot risk of treating a patient with a very rare complication from mifepristone. And that's in part because 6 million patients have taken mifepristone since the year 2000. And the risk of fatal adverse effects is 0.00027%. So it's a really, really, really small chance anyone has severe complications from taking this drug. And even more to the point, doctors who have conscience objections to treating patients with mifepristone complications are allowed under federal law to refuse to treat those patients. All of that notwithstanding, Justice Elena Kagan asked Ms. Hawley for one example of a doctor with a conscience objection who was forced to treat one of these patients. Justice Kagan essentially begged Hawley for something, anything, that would give her plaintiffs a legal reason to file this lawsuit in the first place, something known as standing.
You need a person to be able to come in and meet the court's regular standing requirements. So you agree with that, yes?
I think that's correct, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, so who's your person?
There is no person. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, for her part, was not having any of this. She suggested that the remedy here, with getting rid of mifepristone for everybody, was ridiculously broad, especially given the highly unlikely and as yet totally hypothetical harm that could be done to this group of seven physicians and dentists.
Counsel, can I ask you about the remedy and sort of the way that I was talking with the SG. I mean, it makes perfect sense for the individual doctors to seek an exemption. But as I understand it, they already have that. And so what they're asking for here is that in order to prevent them from possibly ever having to do these kinds of procedures, everyone else should be prevented from getting access to this medication. So why isn't that plainly overbroad scope of the remedy, the end of this case?
From that question, we finally got Ms. Hawley's central argument as to why national restrictions must be imposed to shield these seven doctors.
These are emergency situations. Respondent doctors don't necessarily know until they scrub into that operating room whether this may or may not be abortion drug harm. Because these are emergency situations, they can't waste precious moments scrubbing in.
I'm saying assuming we have a world in which they can actually lodge the objections that you say that they have. My question isn't that enough to remedy their issue? Do we have to also entertain your argument that no one else in the world can have this drug or no one else in America should have this drug in order to protect your clients?
So again, Your Honor, it's not possible given the emergency nature of these situations.
Counsel, let me interrupt there. I'm sorry.
That was a real argument before the Supreme Court today, that mifepristone has to be banned for everyone after 7 weeks of pregnancy because emergency room doctors don't have time to wash their hands repeatedly. We will have to wait until June to know what the court thinks of that. Joining me now, Jessica Valenti, author and writer of Abortion Every Day, Carrie Ann Baker, Smith College professor, contributing editor at Miss Magazine, and author of the forthcoming book, History and Politics of Abortion Pills in the United States, a timely read, and Dahlia Lithwick, Slate's senior editor and host of the Great Amicus podcast. Ladies, there are no better people to be talking to in this crisis moment. Jessica.
Yeah.
Scrubbing in and scrubbing out. It's just too much for doctors, therefore no mifepristone for anybody. I mean, I found it appalling, but also shocking, if you that can even be possible.
You know, I almost didn't find it shocking or surprising, because the group of doctors that they brought forth with this case are such an egregious, radical group of anti-abortion extremists. This is very much who they are. They don't care about patients. They don't care about women's health. This is a group, one of the doctors that they have involved in this case, this is a group that wants doctors to be forced to give women with life-threatening pregnancies C-sections instead of abortions. That's how radical they are. And I really don't want that to get lost in this conversation, that these doctors, they're not run-of-the-mill. This is not one good faith side of a political debate.
Yeah, I wonder, Carrie, when you listened to the, I'll call it skepticism from the part of some conservative justices, do you feel like this case, and I'm just going to limit to this case because we'll talk about the broader landscape for reproductive freedom in a second, but do you feel like Aaron Hawley's husband, but Aaron Hawley is making a case that goes anywhere with this court?
It didn't sound like it. It sounded like the court was prepared to dismiss the case on standing. The standing is so weak, mm-hmm. but not just the standing. The facts are weak. The science, the law is weak. This case is weak across the board. It's absurd that it's even before the Supreme Court. Mifepristone, as you said, is so safe, safer than Tylenol. It should be over the counter. It's been highly restricted simply because the anti-abortion movement has been pushing from the very beginning to restrict access, to prevent people from being able to access the drug. So, I'm hoping that the court will dismiss it, but the anti-abortion movement will not give up. They will come back. The Project 2025 has promised that if a Republican president gets into office, that he will direct the FDA to pull mifepristone from the market, or at least restrict telemedicine abortion, which has been a key way that more people have accessed abortion. So they're not going to give up, even if the court does dismiss this case.
Dahlia, why did the court take this case up? Is this damage control post-Dobbs? I mean, what was the point of this? Was it to just give Clarence Thomas what he wants, which is absurd hearings on any manner of social issues?
Not exactly. The court has a structural problem, and the structural problem is that anybody who wanted to file this case could go down to Amarillo, Texas, where Judge Matthew Kaczmarek it's like putting, your quarter in the candy bar machine. The only judge you were going to get in Amarillo was Judge Kaczmarek. And then they knew that after getting him, he'd do something incredibly dopey, like file a nationwide injunction, making it impossible for anyone in the country to get this drug. And so we have a judge shopping problem in this country that I should note the courts are trying to address now. But for the moment, the court has the problem of one rogue judge, a rogue Fifth Circuit that blessed huge chunks of his irrational, indefensible logic. And the court had no choice but to take this case. And so I think as long as we have kind of judges that are way, way, way to the fringes, judges who make Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas look like kind of centrist moderates like they did today, those cases are going to rocket up to the court, and the court is going to be embarrassed, and they were embarrassed today, and they're going to have to take them and bat them away. So that's just a problem with judge shopping. It's a problem with fake facts, and as Carrie said, bad science that somehow makes it into the court's lap, and then the court has to sort of muck out the stall.
I want to get back to Kaczmarek in a second, but Jessica, I mean, we don't know what the court's going to do. They certainly sounded skeptical. And before we even get to the dismissal of this case being gobbledygook nonsense, there's a very real impact that all of this has when we talk about re-regulating mifepristone, right? And especially when we're talking about women in states where abortion has been banned. I mean, women across the country, people who are pregnant across this country will be affected.
Right.
But it is acute. It is a real crisis for these women in states, largely red states, where they can't have access to basic reproductive choices.
Yeah, there's a reason that we saw the use of abortion medication go up so drastically from 2020, right? It was 53% of abortions in 2020. Now it's 63%. So a lot of that is accounted for women in anti-choice states who are getting that medication shipped to them. If they don't have that choice and they don't have the ability to leave the state, they're trapped. They're hostages in a state that will not let them get basic health care.
I do think, as we talk about what happens to these women, regardless of, well, not regardless, as the Supreme Court takes this up, Dahlia points out, and you point out, I think rightly, that the fight is not even beginning to be over, right? Kaczmarek has suggested he might take this case, re-rule on this, this same issue in a different kind of context. And there was a lot of talk today about the Comstock Act, which is a zombie law. An anti-pornography law that restricts the mailing of abortifacients, if you will. It's from the 19th century, but that shouldn't stop the Republican Party, right? Can you talk a little bit more about the way in which you think this court may use the Comstock Act in the future if this case doesn't work its will?
So the Comstock law prohibited mailing abortifacients, as you say, and what the anti-abortion movement is doing is trying to revive that law 150 more years later to try to ban mailing mifepristone. And it wouldn't only impact mifepristone, it would also impact the other medication, misoprostol, which is the second medication you take. And by the way, you can use misoprostol alone for abortion. It's an ulcer medication. It's widely available. It could potentially be banned from mailing for anybody. And instruments used in abortion designed to use for procedural abortion could also be banned. You know, so it's a really extreme approach that they're taking that could limit access to abortion not only for people in states that ban it, but states like New York, Massachusetts, California. It would make abortion, they're trying to ban abortion nationwide by using this backdoor.
And I've also got to say, they could also use that law to ban the shipping of emergency contraception, which they say is abortion, right? Alliance Defending Freedom, the CEO and president, gave an interview to Politico just a couple of days ago where she admitted that they believe emergency contraception is abortion. So once you have these groups redefining what abortion is, and you have a law that says you can't mail abortion medication, that could include emergency contraception. They can use this so broadly. And it's so important that we're thinking about all of those impacts.
Well, they're coming after contraception as well as abortion.
I mean, well, once you say that life begins at conception, you enter into a whole host of interesting moral quandaries. I mean, I will say to your point, Jessica, you know, Jonathan Mitchell, who's been the architect of a lot of this in legal circles, has said we don't need actually any judgment from the court. We have the Comstock law on the books. We got it. We're done. We just need a Republican president in office. Those are the stakes. Jessica Valenti, the indispensable resource on all things abortion-related, reproductive freedom, the war at hand. Thank you for your time, my friend. Carrie and Dahlia, stick with us. We have to talk a little bit more about this court, especially the legal ramifications of today's arguments. Also ahead tonight, journalist Paola Ramos has a special report for us. For us, this show, from across the southern border, where there is a network of underground volunteers distributing abortion medication to women here in America. That is an exclusive we will have later on this hour. Plus, right-wing commentators have somehow found a way to make the disaster that toppled the bridge in Baltimore even worse. That is coming up.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Human nature can get a little messy, but nature is powerful enough to save us from ourselves. Seventh Generation Laundry Detergent lifts away tough stains with a 97% bio-based formula. For when you think whipping up yellow curry chicken in white pants is a great idea, totally not speaking from experience. Let nature do its thing, so you can feel confident doing yours. That's the power of Seventh Generation. Find Seventh Generation Laundry Detergent in fresh lavender and other scents at SeventhGeneration.com.
The statement was made that no court has ever previously second-guessed the FDA's judgment about access to a drug, right? And it's never second-guessed that.
That's correct.
You think the FDA is infallible?
No, Your Honor. We don't think that at all. And we don't think that question is really teed up in any way in this case.
Do you think the FDA is infallible? That was Justice Samuel Alito's question today in the Supreme Court case that could determine the future of medication abortion and also the future of drug approval in this country. The FDA, after all, is the federal regulatory agency that approves new drugs in the United States. And this case calls into question whether the courts should believe the FDA when it says a drug is safe. Justice Alito's skepticism there tells us a lot about the court's conservatives, and it suggests that they may be thinking about something much bigger than even abortion, namely whether conservatives are going after the regulatory state on whole. Right now, right-wing judicial activists have brought a series of cases that threaten to upend 40 years of Supreme Court precedent and hobble the federal government's basic ability to enforce laws. Those lawsuits are trying to limit regulators' ability to enforce everything from laws against insider trading to laws that protect the food we eat and the air we breathe. Back with me are Carrie Baker and Dahlia Lithwick. Dahlia, let me first just talk to you about this case is obviously about mifepristone, but it really is about whether we believe the FDA, as Alito says, is it infallible? I mean, do you think this court is prepared to go get into it with Big Pharma?
I mean, that's the question. It was very clear from Justice Alito's questions today, not only that he wants to second guess the FDA, but he really wants to stake a claim that, you know, the maker of these pharmaceuticals is money grubbing and greedy and doesn't want to know how dangerous their product is, so they won't do the studies. Like, there's a real kind of sly dig over and over again at Big Pharma. But Big Pharma is so profoundly arrayed against Judge Kaczmarek's crazy order, because you can't test drugs, you can't create drugs, you can't do anything if one person objecting in South Dakota can get the entire medication pulled. And so this is, in some sense, an easy case for a big business court that really wants Big Pharma to win. But I think under your question is this harder question, which is this entire term has been a kind of deregulatory juggernaut where the court keeps usurping to itself the power to decide what clean air looks like and decide, you know, how bureaus work and to decide, you know, how fishermen have to enforce fishing rules. And, you know, this is of a piece with that, this dripping contempt for federal regulation. And the most interesting moment, I thought, after Justice Alito said that question about, you know, are they infallible? Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson came back very quickly with, are we best suited to make like deep dives on science and scientific regulation? Because this is the pattern that we see in this court. They're here to tell us what the Clean Water Act looks like now.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Dahlia. That moment where it's like, wait, does Sam Alito know more about ulcer medications than the FDA? I mean, you know the history of this, Carrie. This drug has been regulated more than most drugs on the market. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I mean, it's heavily restricted. The FDA has based all of their decisions on voluminous science. The idea that judges who have law degrees, who have no medical background, no research background, are better at assessing the science than the experts at the FDA is ridiculous. But that's the role they're trying to take for themselves.
Dahlia, they're looking at the Chevron doctrine, which is the sort of foundational like decision that undergirds a lot of regulatory power in the United States. It allows the federal government to basically do its thing, if you will, in layman's terms. Can you talk a little bit about what your expectations are for the ruling in that case? Because it had kind of massive effects on, you know, American life writ whole, much, much more than just one sort of single reproductive freedom issue.
I mean, the Chevron doctrine is just a simple sort of rule that says we defer to agencies own interpretations of how their laws work. We don't second guess the experts and the scientists and the accumulated years of expertise because we're a bunch of judges in robes. And as Carrie just said, we don't know a lot of stuff. And as you said, that is on the chopping block this year. And in some sense, it comes hand in hand with the major questions doctrine, which is another doctrine that isn't a doctrine and has no sort of roots in anything shallower than sand. And it's another rule that the court has given itself that says if something is a big deal, for instance, President Biden's loan forgiveness plan last year, then we get to decide on that too. So we're seeing the court with this utter lack of humility go from agency to agency and pick off, as you said, the notion that agencies can enforce their own rules in ways that are reasonable. And even in some cases to say, oh, that's just too big a deal, and so we're going to decide on that too. It's a way of both kneecapping the federal government, how government works, and also of giving to the justices themselves almost unbounded authority to decide how we live.
Yeah. I mean, Leonard Leo, who's in many ways the architect of this conservative court, says the hard left likes the administrative state because that's how basically they get their social safety net established. And that is who this court is going after in a big way, not even hiding its intentions. Dahlia Lithwick and Carrie Baker, thank you both so much for your time and expertise. Really appreciate it. Coming up next, the number of women using abortion pills to end pregnancies has surged since the Dobbs decision in 2022. We have a special report from Mexico City where underground networks are helping women in states with bans get the reproductive care that they need elsewhere. That's next.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Human nature can get a little messy, but nature is powerful enough to save us from ourselves. Seventh Generation Laundry Detergent lifts away tough stains with a 97% bio-based formula. For when you think whipping up yellow curry chicken in white pants is a great idea, totally not speaking from experience. Let nature do its thing, so you can feel confident doing yours. That's the power of Seventh Generation. Find Seventh Generation Laundry Detergent in fresh lavender and other scents at seventhgeneration.com.
According to the Guttmacher Institute, in 2023, more than 60% of all abortions in the U.S. formal healthcare system were done using abortion medication. But in reality, that number could be much, much higher. A new report from the Journal of the American Medical Association, known as JAMA, shows that most women who chose to self-manage their abortions in the six-month period after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade obtained their abortion pills outside of the formal healthcare system, particularly from the networks of volunteers that quickly mobilized and expanded after that 2022 decision overturning Roe. Now, some of these networks are here in the U.S., but others are in places like Mexico, where networks are packing and shipping abortion medications, sometimes for free, to women in America who are trying to circumvent their state's harsh abortion bans. In the process, these networks are also increasingly witnessing a secondary reality: an alarming rise in sexual violence against migrants on the Mexico side of the border, one that is leading to unwanted pregnancies here in a post-Roe America. This is a special report from MSNBC contributor Paula Ramos.
We're about to talk to a young asylum seeker who was sexually assaulted on a Mexican border town and then found out she was pregnant as soon as she stepped into Texas. The only reason she agreed to talk to us today is because we will not be disclosing her identity or where we are right now.
When Valentina left El Salvador for the United States, many of her friends cautioned her against it. They knew about the harrowing experiences of women heading north.
te violaron.
Sí.
¿Una vez? ¿Múltiples veces?
Sí, fueron varias veces.
At what point after entering Texas did you find out that you were pregnant?
Al mes y medio, porque como toda mujer esperamos nuestro periodo. Entonces, nunca llegó. Y yo pensé como que fuera como puro estrés por todo el camino, por todo lo que pasó. Ya luego se me vino como que aquello a la mentecita, como que, ¿y si estás embarazada?
Valentina found herself in Texas, pregnant, alone, and planning an abortion.
Were you aware of the strict abortion laws that are enforced in Texas?
No. Entonces yo fui buscando información en Google, videos y todo, y en Facebook grupos de personas que la vendían y todo eso.
Yeah, and what did you learn?
De todo fue como que apuntaba como, en Texas no puedes hacer nada.
Were you looking for clinical help? What did you want?
En mi cabeza siempre estuvo como, compra las pastillas. Lo veía tan fácil como que tomarme una pastilla y ya.
The pills Valentina is referring to are a combination of mifepristone and misoprostol, the FDA-approved regimen for medical termination of pregnancy. More than 60% of all abortions performed in the United States are done using these pills. But since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022, 14 Republican-led states, including Texas, have banned the medication.
Habían como muchos lugares donde conseguirlas, pero no te enviaban a Texas.
Valentina found a group that was able to ship the pills to a friend's house in a nearby state. At 14 weeks pregnant, she found herself packing once more, this time to carry out a self-managed abortion. Weeks after she returned to Texas, Valentina managed to obtain more packs of misoprostol, one of the abortion pills she used. Inspired by her own struggle, she decided to break the law to help women in similar situations.
Were you aware that what you were doing was illegal?
Siempre estuvo consciente como de la manera ilegal que era todo. Tengo dos opciones, o me daño mi récord o ayudo. Y yo pues dije, no, pues prefiero ayudar y que sea lo que pase.
Do you have any left right now?
Sí, ayudé cuatro personas y queda una es la restante.
Are you still thinking about helping other women?
Ya esta etapa allí yo creo que ya está cerrada. Mi última dosis se la di a una chica de acá en Texas, que vivía como a 40 minutos de mi casa y me dijo, pues mira, fíjate que voy llegando y estoy embarazada, necesito una dosis. Yo le dije, okay, te las voy a ir a dejar.
Valentina says she's no longer providing abortion pills. But on the other side of the border, activists are working day and night to fill the void.
Hola.
Hola, ¿qué tal?
Te habla Paula Ramos.
Hola, Pau.
This is Evelyn, a young doctor from Mexico City who's part of an international network helping women obtain both mifepristone and misoprostol. Since the overturn of Roe v. Wade in 2022, much of that help is being routed to Texas. She asked for her identity to be concealed in order to protect the operation.
Approximately how big is this network? How many people are part of it?
Somos ahorita actualmente como unas 15,000.
Wow, 15,000 personas. And who are they mostly? Where are they contacting you from?
La mayor parte mujeres migrantes.
Y por diferente contexto social se encuentran en
un embarazo no deseado.
Es decir, que son mujeres que están aquí mismo, en la frontera donde estoy yo.
Ajá, justamente.
How many packs of pills are you sending each week?
Cada semana como unos 4 or 6.
How do you hide these pills? How do you make sure that no one knows what you're mailing?
La manera discreta en la que solemos enviarlo, que pasa muy desapercibido, pues es en toallas sanitarias, en un sobre, y así lo enviamos.
I think many people would ask, what's in it for you, right? Obviously, you're not doing it for economic reasons. So, why do you do it?
Lo hago pues porque entiendo.
No, completamente la realidad de ser mujer. Y creo que el poder ayudarlas, el poder justamente ser ese sostén en este momento tan crítico es fundamental.
Back in Texas, Valentina feels the same way.
You really risk your life and your status. Why?
Porque sé lo que se siente estar allí y no tener ayuda.
MSNBC contributor Paola Ramos filed that special report from south of the border, and we're going to hear more from her tomorrow. But first, coming up, where there is tragedy, there is conspiracy. How the right wing is talking about the Baltimore Bridge collapse right after the break. Tonight, the search and rescue mission in Baltimore for the six individuals authorities believe were on the Francis Scott Key Bridge when it collapsed late last night. Tonight, that mission switched from a rescue mission to a recovery effort, as all six individuals are now presumed dead. Thanks to a live stream of the bridge and police dispatch audio, we now know just how close this bridge collapse came to being an even bigger disaster. This is the live stream of the bridge last night, about 2 minutes before it collapsed. You can see there is a steady flow of cars going over the bridge. This happened moments later.
Any one of you guys on the south side, one of you guys on the north side, hold all traffic on the Key Bridge. There's a ship approaching that just lost their steering. So until you get that under control, we got to stop all traffic.
Yeah, we're all on the route to the south side.
This is West Direction.
I'm holding traffic now. I was driving, but we stopped prior to the bridge, so I'll have all out-of-loop traffic stopped.
In less than 20 seconds, the police had stopped the flow of traffic on the bridge, and about 30 seconds after they did that, the bridge collapsed.
10-4, is there a crew working on the bridge right now?
Yeah, if we can stop traffic, just make sure no one's on the bridge right now. I'm not sure where there's a crew up there. We might want to notify whoever the foreman is, see if we can get them off the bridge temporarily.
Ten-4. Once the other unit gets here, I'll ride up on the bridge. I have all interloop traffic stopped at this time. Once you get here, I'll go grab the workers on the Key Bridge and then stop the outer loop.
C-13 dispatch. The whole bridge just fell down. Everybody. The whole bridge just collapsed.
Today, authorities confirmed that the six individuals they are still looking for the remains of were all members of that crew that was working on the bridge. They were reportedly fixing potholes. Authorities say there are no signs of foul play here. They believe this was an accident. But the right wing is already pushing conspiracy theories that this was a cyber attack that somehow the Obamas were a part of, or that the real cause here was diversity, equity, inclusion programs because the shipping company practiced inclusive hiring policies. And despite the fact that there are still six individuals now presumed dead whose bodies have yet to be recovered, individuals we now know were construction workers from El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico. Despite that, the right is desperate to use this tragedy to fan the flames of xenophobia.
The ship involved in the collapse of the bridge is 948 feet long, called the Dolly, a Singaporean-flagged container. But, of course, you've been talking a lot about the potential for wrongdoing or potential for foul play given the wide-open border.
To my friends in the conservative media, sometimes it is okay to report on something bad that happened and not blame it on liberals or liberalism and or brown people. This was an accident, and this was a tragedy. Treat it like one. We have one more story for you tonight. Spoiler alert. Independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has just made a very big decision that could inject chaos into the presidential race this November. More on that ahead.
I'm so proud to introduce to you the next Vice President of the United States, my fellow lawyer, a brilliant scientist, technologist, a fierce warrior mom, Nicole Shanahan.
Not Aaron Rodgers, not Jesse Ventura. Today, independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. revealed his pick for vice president in Oakland, California, and her name is Nicole Shanahan. She is a Silicon Valley lawyer and entrepreneur, and she is the ex-wife of Google co-founder Sergey Brin. Now, Shanahan has never held office, but she has plenty of money. She donated $4 million to Kennedy's Super PAC to help pay for his very questionable Super Bowl ad. In addition to the cash prize here, Kennedy is selecting his VP now because many states require independent candidates to pick a running mate before they can apply for ballot access. Axios reports the Biden campaign already has a team in place to fight Kennedy's candidacy. Joining me now from Oakland is Michelle Goldberg, opinion columnist for The New York Times, who covered today's campaign announcement in the state of California. Michelle, thank you for dialing in from the West Coast here. My first question is, how was the speech?
Her speech, it was so her speech. Well, first of all, she's obviously not a practiced politician, and it really shows. I think there's a bit of bafflement among, not necessarily among political professionals who assume that Kennedy chose her so that she can self-fund their ballot access campaign. But I think among quite a few Kennedy supporters, I mean, there were certainly people in the crowd who were excited about this pick, but you could just, it came after a couple, the rally had already been going on for I think a couple of hours by the time she came out, and her speech was a little bit meandering and digressive, and you could just see the auditorium, which wasn't that crowded to begin with, kind of emptying out. And so it was, there was a big difference between when she started and when she finished.
Nicole Shanahan is someone who has supported Democratic causes before. I believe she gave to the Biden campaign in 2020. There is a narrative out there that Kennedy's candidacy hurts Biden more than it hurts Trump. Can you talk a little bit about who was in the audience today?
Yeah, so I know that that's the narrative, and that may well be true. I think we don't know. And when I've spoken to, pollsters and people at the DNC, kind of everybody agrees that Kennedy is somewhat of a wild card. I will say that coming to Oakland, which is obviously in the middle of a very progressive part of the country, I think I expected to meet more disaffected Democrats. Instead, what I mostly met, I met some very far left people, one guy who had an Ask Me About 9/11 button on, who described himself as a socialist. But a lot of the people that I met either voted for Trump in 2020 or said that if Kennedy wasn't on the ballot, they would vote for him in 2024. It was a more right-leaning than left-leaning crowd for sure.
What if RFK Jr. himself? I mean, the polling out of Quinnipiac circa December of last year shows in a three-way matchup, Biden at 38%, Trump at 36%, Kennedy at 22%, which is a formidably high number in a close election. How was he as a candidate as you saw him on the stump today?
Well, I would say that on the one hand, he certainly speaks to, I think he mixes kind of grains of truth or kind of genuine concerns. He speaks to people who genuinely feel somewhat despairing about the level of division and rancor in our politics and wish we could go back to a time of more unity and inspiration. And that's all well and good. But then he interweaves that with a lot of conspiracy theories and misinformation. And I think that ultimately, there's obviously kind of Democrats who might be attracted to him because of the Kennedy mystique and the Kennedy name. But, I think, when he's talking about things like border security and social media censorship and vaccine mandates and lockdowns, it's not really Democrats that he's appealing to.
Yeah, well, and it's a matter of moments before the entire Kennedy clan, excepting RFK Jr., is on the campaign trail with Joe Biden. So we'll see how that works out for him. Michelle Goldberg, my friend, opinion columnist for The New York Times, heading up our Oakland bureau. Thank you for making the time tonight.
Thank you.
Before we go, I do have an update on a story that some of you may have been following in recent days. NBC News has announced tonight that it has dropped former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel as a paid on-air contributor. Now, that decision comes less than a week after this company announced Ms. McDaniel's hiring, and it is due in no small part to the efforts here, both in front of the camera and behind it, to make clear that her hiring was a very serious mistake. A lot of my colleagues in primetime here, actually all of them, have weighed in on this, so I'm not going to belabor the point, except to say election denialists do not belong in the payroll of a news organization. people who seek to undermine democracy should not be contracted to work at an institution that seeks to preserve it. Tonight, the man who is the boss of all of us, NBC Universal News Group Chairman Cesar Conde, confirmed that Ronna McDaniel would not be an NBC News contributor either. In a note to the staff, he said no organization, particularly a newsroom, can succeed unless it is cohesive and aligned. Over the last few days, it has become clear that this appointment undermines that goal. Through the last few days, we have been given license to say what we felt was wrong with this call. And so I also think it's important to speak up when we feel like the right thing was done. Companies make mistakes, sometimes very big ones, sometimes very publicly. What matters, especially in the end, is how they correct them. And from what we can see right now at this hour, it looks like our company listened to us, to you, and did what was right. That is our show for tonight.
Human nature can get a little messy, but nature is powerful enough to save us from ourselves. Seventh generation laundry detergent lifts away tough stains with a 97% bio-based formula. For when you think whipping up yellow curry chicken in white pants is a great idea, totally not speaking from experience. Let nature do its thing so you can feel confident doing yours. That's the power of Seventh Generation. Find Seventh Generation laundry detergent in fresh lavender and other scents at seventhgeneration.com.